WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. And as you heard, right after Ralph and Company, you will hear Arts Express over this commercial-free, listener-sponsored radio station, WBAI. It's 10 a.m. in New York, and coming up next is Ecologic with Ken Gayo, Sally Gellert, and Donna Stein.
A parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? It paved paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on prolonging
see a windmill go, feel the pull of an ocean wave, the heat from a volcano. There's so much we could do, there's so much we could know, if we listen to the earth.
Welcome. Glad you can join us for Ecologic. Clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. This is Ecologic for Wednesday, December 13th, 2023.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
Our guests this week are Kyla Bennett and Joel Kupferman. We thank Joel for his leadership in producing today's show.
Yeah,
we're going to be talking about PFAS today, but first, we have information on an attempt to bypass New York State's ban on fracking and information on a federal bill to strengthen the Clean Water Act.
A newly formed Texas company, Southern Tier Solutions, is attempting to evade New York State's fracking ban with a scheme to drill thousands of wells, inject pressurized carbon dioxide, CO2, to release the gas, and construct a dozen gas-burning power plants. As this is not conventional fracking, if the current version may be called conventional, it's been used only for a couple of decades, the company hopes to get around New York's landmark fracking ban. This shows that carbon capture and sequestration, or CCS, is a false solution to climate change. Tomorrow, Thursday evening, December 14th, Food and Water Watch will host a call to discuss the details and opportunities to protect the state's historic fracking ban.
Yeah,
a registration link is on our website, ecoradio.org.
The Clean Water Act has been attacked and eroded almost since it was passed 50 years ago. But there is good news from Congress on strengthening it. On October 18th, the 50th anniversary of the Clean Water Act, four representatives introduced the Clean Water Act of 2023, H.R. 5983. Prompted in part by two recent court decisions, especially a narrow interpretation of navigable waters. The Act aims to address critical issues in water resource management and protection. Currently, there are 130 House Democrats co-sponsoring the bill, no Republicans yet, which includes the following goals to strengthen the original Clean Water Act.
That's great.
One, reaffirm the congressional commitment to restore and maintain the integrity of the nation's water sources. Two, clearly define protected water resources under the Clean Water Act based on scientific evidence and decades of federal, state, and tribal collaboration. Three, eliminate confusion caused by a narrow Supreme Court interpretation of navigable waters and establish a comprehensive authority under the Clean Water Act. And four, reinstate a national minimum standard of protection for water resources to the fullest extent of Congress's constitutional authority. We have a link to the bill on our website, which has recently been restored thanks to Charlie Olson and his friend Eric.
Now we welcome Kyla Bennett and Joel Kufferman. Please introduce yourself. Kyla?
Thank you so much for having me. My name is Kyla Bennett. I am the chief scientist or science policy advisor for PEER, Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. PEER is a national nonprofit based just outside of Washington, D.C., and we basically support and defend whistleblowers who work at the local, state, or federal level of government working in the environmental or health space. So I have a lot of clients from around the country at all levels of government who bring allegations of corruption and illegality and all sorts of things going on. And we try to address those issues and also protect the whistleblowers themselves. And thank you so much for having me today.
Joel
Kufferman. I'm co-chair of the National Lawyers Guild Environmental Committee and executive director of the Environmental Justice Initiative, New York Environmental Law and Justice Project. And I've been proud to say that I've been working with Kyler for many years with PEER. And unfortunately, our second guest, Brenda Hampton, who was going to be on, and unfortunately, she faced the death in her family. We worked with them fighting a campaign against PFAS in Alabama, directly against 3M itself. And a lot of our cases have to do with water, soil, and air from New York City and beyond, and PFA is always hovering above. And part of our concern is that there's a lot of studies that are being done and a lot of data that's out there. But when push comes to shove, there's just a lack of enforcement, our ongoing theme, and it also applies to the PFA problem.
That is an ongoing theme. Kyla, would you explain just what PFAS are?
Sure. It's not as easy as it sounds. PFAS is an acronym for per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, which is a mouthful, which is why we call them PFAS. It's a very, very large class of chemicals. EPA thinks there are about 14,000. Some scientists think that there are more. And really, the number of chemicals that fall into this class of PFAS chemicals, it depends on how you define it. And unfortunately, there are even fights over how to define these chemicals. But the bottom line is they all have several things in common. First of all, they all have a carbon fluorine backbone, if you will, in their structure. And that carbon fluorine bond is one of the strongest bonds known in organic chemistry and very, very difficult, almost impossible to break. And that's why PFAS have obtained this nickname of the forever chemicals, because they simply do not break down. And because they don't break down, then they are very persistent in both the environment and also in human and animal bodies. And they bioaccumulate. And all of the ones that we have tested are extremely toxic. Some are carcinogenic.
What does bioaccumulate mean?
Bioaccumulate means that it just keeps adding more and more into your body. So in other words, if I have a drink of water and it's contaminated with PFAS, it doesn't just flush out of my body. I can't do anything to get it out of my body. It gets into my bloodstream. And as I drink more and more of that contaminated water, the amount in my body just accumulates higher and higher.
And what happens to your body when you accumulate it higher and higher? Is there any way of getting rid of it?
Well, there is. It's not a way that you want to do it. You can get rid of it by getting a blood transfusion. Women tend to have lower, women of reproductive ages tend to have lower amounts of PFAS because they shed blood in their monthly cycle. So it has been found that you can lower your amount of PFAS in your blood if you do a blood transfusion, if you get rid of some of your blood. However, that being said, over time, that level can go down. I know I myself have reduced the levels of my blood substantially just by being really, really careful about what I eat, what I drink, and what consumer products I use. But the health effects associated with PFAS are many. They're very varied. They can affect almost all the organs of your body. Some of them are known to cause kidney and testicular cancer. They are thyroid disruptors, endocrine disruptors. They cause obesity, diabetes, high cholesterol, developmental issues, preeclampsia in pregnant people. The list goes on and on and on. There's really nothing good about any of these chemicals. And indeed, in March of this year, the EPA put out some draft maximum contaminant levels, or MCLs, which are basically regulatory limits for 6 PFAS in our drinking water. And they said that there is virtually no safe level of 2 of these PFAS, PFOA and PFOS. And these are the most well-studied and legacy PFAS in the United States. They've been around since the 1940s, and they're very, very dangerous.
What are the tests available if people want to know the levels in their bodies?
So you can actually get a test from your doctor. I got mine tested through Quest, you know, the lab. But your doctor has to order it. Otherwise, it's very expensive. If you have the money out of pocket, you can go to a regular lab like Eurofins, which is a very good lab around the world. They will test your blood, but it's hundreds and hundreds of dollars. But if you have some medical problem, or if your water has been contaminated like mine was, my insurance company actually paid for my blood test. Now, it only tested for 6 PFAS. And remember, I said earlier, there are over 14,000 of them. So you're only getting a very small snapshot.
Oh, my God.
I just want to point out that that's the environmental justice problem, is the availability of medical monitoring and medical access. And New York State had a system of environmental occupational clinics, which they basically defunded. So it's important to bring back medical access for those most affected.
I agree wholeheartedly. And Joel raises a very good point, which is there was just a study that came out this year. I believe Harvard did it. Some scientists there and some others that showed that PFAS contamination is significantly worse in environmental justice communities, specifically communities that have Black and Latinx community members. They have more PFAS, and they are the ones who get the brunt of the contamination in their drinking water.
You mentioned, you know, endocrine disruptors, and it seems that every time we talk about plastics on Ecologic, we talk about endocrine disruptors. And could you explain what that means and just how important the endocrine system is in our body?
Sure. Endocrines are very important for every aspect of our growth and development, and regulating our bodies and all of our systems. And when you're talking about endocrine disruptors, typically what happens are these chemicals will mimic a natural endocrine that's in your body, and then it doesn't do what it's supposed to do. So it makes your body misfire, if you will, and not do the things that it's supposed to, or not develop the way it's supposed to, given that these mimicking chemicals will prevent the real endocrines from doing their job.
Now, these chemicals are in all sorts of things, right? I mean, we hear about waterproof clothing, and Brenda mentioned costume jewelry, which was a surprise to me. Waterproof mascara, Teflon, we've all heard about. How do you avoid this stuff?
It's very, very difficult. They are ubiquitous. They're in our carpets, in upholstered furniture for stain resistance. So the whole reason that PFAS are used, they were discovered accidentally in the late 1930s, but they are very handy chemicals because they're water repellent, stain repellent, grease repellent. They make things move very easily. They make things spread very evenly. So a surfactant, for example. So they're used in pesticides. They're used in artificial turf fields, in makeup, in guitar strings. So many things that they don't need to be in there. Cookware, tents and backpacks. Waterproof rain gear. Now, there are alternatives, but reducing your own PFAS load or your exposure is incredibly difficult. One of the things that I recommend everybody does is get a home filtration system. And some towns, like my town that had contaminated water, they actually paid for our filtration systems at home. But bottled water is not the answer for several reasons. First of all, most bottled water comes in plastic, and plastic is bad, and some plastic contains PFAS. But also bottled water is not regulated for PFAS, and a lot of the bottled water has PFAS. So you're much better off filtering your own tap water. Now, New York City actually has very low levels of PFAS compared to many parts of the country, but it doesn't mean it's completely safe. Remember, EPA said two of these PFAS, there is no safe dose, and there is some in New York City water. So, but everybody should get a filter. And then be careful about what you buy. Use your purchasing power. I send out emails or call companies all the time and say, do you use PFAS in your products? And you have to be careful because there's a lot of greenwashing going on. But there are websites, which I can give you if you want to show them to your viewers later, that have PFAS-free products on them. So you can actually try to purchase products that do not have PFAS in them.
Yeah. That's a PFAS- and so we did it. Fast fashion show, a representative from Greenpeace Germany said, Europe has said no to PFAS in clothing. Why is Patagonia taking so long? And yeah.
So, good question.
Yeah.
Kyla pointed out the good benefits of PFAS of why they were originally used. I think it's part of this a litany of chemicals that we're still facing. It was asbestos, lead, and PCBs. Mm-hmm. That were the panacea for a lot of problems, and they became became purgatory and quagmire. So we're always dependent upon another chemical to fix our problems, and I really want to urge everyone to be aware of techno fixes.
And that raises another really good point, Joel, which is that EPA's program, their Office of New Chemicals, is really broken. They are not working well. And the law isn't set up to work well. So in most countries, and even at the FDA, if you think about a new drug that's coming on, that drug company will have to prove to the FDA that their drug is safe and effective. Well, in the case of new chemicals, it doesn't work that way. The company brings forward a chemical and says to EPA, prove to us that it's dangerous. And if you can't, we get to put it on the market. So it's kind of flipped the whole thing on its head. And it's very difficult for EPA to, in the statutory timeframe they have, which is only 90 days, to say, yes, this chemical is safe, or no, it's not. And they are so captured by industry at this point, they rarely make the right decision, which is why we're one of the few countries that still has legal asbestos and formaldehyde and all of these chemicals that other countries have banned.
Brenda Hampton, who couldn't be on our show today, said that, you know, we used to make these products without PFAS. We can do that again. And what a simple bit of logic she gave us.
It's absolutely true. We've been pushing EPA and states and actually in the void, the regulatory void left by EPA's inaction, a lot of states have been stepping up to the plate. Maine is one of them that's been doing a great job trying to regulate PFAS, and they're trying to ban PFAS in products. Mm-hmm. In New York, actually, is banning PFAS in carpet and artificial turf, which is great. It doesn't kick in. That law already passed, doesn't kick in for another year or so, but they did do it, which is great. But the bottom line is that most of the uses of PFAS are not essential. We do not need them in our waterproof mascara. We really don't need them on our guitar strings or on our couches or in our carpet. Are there some essential uses? Possibly. For example, there are some medicines that are made with PFAS, Prozac, Flonase, Paxlovid, the drug that's used to combat COVID-19 is itself PFAS. So my view is that what we should be doing is banning all non-essential uses, the mascara, the carpets, the pots and pans, all of those conveniences. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't be using any PFAS there. And then for the more essential uses, like the ones in masks that you wear to protect yourself from airborne diseases or the medicines, let's look really hard for alternatives down the road. But right now, it would be very simple to ban all non-essential uses.
Right. And if you don't have all those non-essential PFASs, the few that you get from the essential ones would not be as severe.
Correct.
How do we make that happen?
Well, I think what we have to do is put pressure on our politicians and also, use your purchasing power. You don't have to buy. People should not be buying this stuff. You should not be buying nonstick pans. Stainless steel, cast iron, they work great. Don't buy nonstick. Don't buy rain gear that has, I bought a raincoat and rain pants that work great. No PFAS in them. There are options out there. My mascara, okay, it's going to run. I'm not buying waterproof mascara. No, we should be taking control of the things that we can control. But unfortunately, there are so many products. These are not listed in the ingredients most of the time. So you can't pick up a package and say, oh, this has PFAS, I'm not going to buy it. It's much harder than that, which is really, really unfortunate. So pressing your local, state, and federal government to have labeling laws. We should be requiring every company that manufactures something with PFAS to have it right there on a label, like they do with cigarettes. This is dangerous. Mm-hmm. This may give you cancer, because there are three routes of exposure for PFAS. You can ingest them through food and water. You can inhale them through dust, or you can dermally absorb them. So firefighters, for example, there is PFAS in their turnout gear. That gear that they wear to protect them when they go into a fire, that has PFAS in it. And the primary cause of death of online firefighter for firefighters on online duty is cancer. And it's from their turnout gear. So,
Joel, how would you address Sally's question?
Well, first thing, I just want to say, after representing the firefighters after 9/11, we found out that it was in their, not just in their uniforms, but they didn't replace the uniforms. And also firefighters face firefighting foam, which is a major problem. How I address the problem is that the purchasing power of New York City, New York State, and the federal government is really, really strong and big. They should start just purchasing correct products. So, you know, and not only will it decrease the consumption, it also creates the market for safe products. So everyone from the smallest town to the largest city should try to force their governments to have, you know, correct purchasing.
Sure, because they buy a lot more than we as an individual will, so that their effect is going to be felt sooner.
And not only that, it's also going to help identify those products and get the word out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Are there any bill numbers being proposed by anybody in any state in the union?
Please.
there are several bills in Congress right now in the U.S. Congress, but they're not very good bills, and you have to wonder why, because this is really a bipartisan issue. There is a PFAS caucus that has both Republicans and Democrats on it in Congress. And there are people on both sides of the aisle who are very concerned about it because their constituents have been adversely impacted. But the problem is that Food and Water Watch did this wonderful report. It just came out a couple weeks ago that showed that over the past few years, PFAS industry, the chemical industry, has spent $110 million lobbying Congress to prevent these laws from getting passed or to water them down. And that's what's happening. So right now at the federal level, EPA doesn't even have a standard definition of PFAS, and you can't regulate what you can't define. Mm-hmm. So we need to pressure our federal representatives to, number one, define PFAS broadly. Number two, regulate them as a class, because right now EPA is regulating them one by one. So they are now proposing regulations for six, and there are 14,000. So this is going to take us thousands of years if we go along this whack-a-mole approach of just one at a time. So we really need to regulate them as a class. EPA has the authority to do that. They need to do that, because what's happening is we're getting what we call regrettable substitutions. Once we realized that PFOA and PFOS are nasty carcinogens, the companies, the chemical companies, just came up with a new one that's called Gen X. And it turns out that Gen X is just as toxic, if not more so, than the original. So these regrettable substitutions aren't working either. We just have to stop it with the PFAS. And the only way we can do that is by regulating them as a class, which is what the states are trying to do. Maine is trying to do it. Massachusetts is trying to do it. California, New York is trying a little bit. but we really need to pressure these states to fill that regulatory void that EPA has left.
And try to enforce the present regulations. A lot of the PFAs are coming out in stormwater runoff, and we're representing people at NYCHA housing. The bad construction that's federally funded is allowing the soil to just basically run off when it rains. Those people are walking through it and into their apartments and bringing not just the PFAS, but lead and cadmium and arsenic into the soils. And we're having problems with EPA in this state refusing to test the water in some of these sites in New York City and refusing to enforce the law in terms of limiting exposure.
And something else that's scary, that's a corollary to what Joel just said, is that biosolids, which is just a nice euphemism for human waste, for sludge. So when you flush your toilet or run water down your sink or your shower, it goes into a sewer system in New York, and then it goes to a wastewater treatment plant, and, and then it's treated. But wastewater treatment plants cannot remove PFAS. In fact, studies have shown that the amount of PFAS in the influent, the stuff coming into the wastewater treatment plants, are actually less than the stuff coming out. So more PFAS is created in that so-called treatment process. And then that those what's left over after they dry that waste, the treated waste, is what they call biosolids. And the these wastewater treatment plants sell it at very cheap prices or give it away as
fertilizer. Kyla, we have to ask you to hold that thought. Come back to us in a minute. Excuse us, please. We need to take a short break.
Sure.
You're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI. I'm Donna Stein.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Ken Gale. Ecologic covers every environmental issue. We help educate and activate our listeners. This makes your donation to us one-stop donating. It's like supporting many groups at the same time. Your donation helps us to help many kinds of groups get the word out about their activities. With a donation of $35 or more, you can choose a gift from our premium selections. Go to give2wbai.org and search for Eco-Logic.
Last week, we talked to David Moskow and John Moskow, authors of From Scratch, Adventures in Harvesting, Hunting, Fishing, and Foraging on a Fragile Planet, based on David's TV series. It's one of the few TV shows that have books. You heard how food workers are on the front lines of climate change, and food sources around the world are in trouble. It's important to know the full story of how our food gets to us. The From Scratch TV crew literally traveled around the world to help us do that. Read about it yourself when you donate $45 to get this book. And by the way, this also renews your membership to WBAI.
From Scratch can be yours as a premium with your donation of $45 or more to WBAI. To get your autographed copy, please call 212-209-2950 or go to give2wbai.org. This book would be a great holiday gift for yourself or a friend or relative. It even has recipes that you can try. From Scratch won a 2023 Nautilus Prize, Better Books for a Better World, and gives you a glimpse into traditional food gathering practices around the world.
There's no other station like WBAI. We have longer, more in-depth interviews than almost all mainstream programs. I like the one you're hearing now. We're free speech radio. We don't bend to corporate advertisers at BAI or at other Pacifica stations, as our funds come from listeners like you.
We often hear from people who used to listen to WBAI, usually about how they have rediscovered us and appreciate our independence and the news, information, and entertainment that is so different from corporate media. We have such a great history and a great future. Help ensure that when you tune in next, we are here for you. Please support us with a donation today to let us know that you're listening. No amount is too small or too big. You can contribute by mail or call 212-209-2950 or go to give2wbai.org.
Years ago, before Donna and Sally joined the show, I went to a meeting of one of New York City's larger environmental groups and was introduced as the host of Ecologic. After the meeting, people came up to me to tell me how much they loved the show. Two people said they especially liked how positive and optimistic the show is. I didn't know how to react. And they continued by defining what they meant by optimism. On Ecologic, we always give solutions to any problem we raise. And they loved that about Ecologic, and I loved their definition of optimism. I looked around, and everyone who had come over to me was nodding their head. I just thought it was the right way to discuss an issue, and Ecologic has been hitting the optimism chord ever since.
When you choose to become our Ecologic BAI buddy, you're giving us a reliable source of support that we can depend on, just as you can depend on WBAI. We're here for you all the time, and you'll be helping to ensure that we stay here. Just $10 or $15 a month, or more if you can, enables people to listen wherever they are, in our listening area and beyond, thanks to the Internet. From people driving on the Jersey Turnpike, to security guards in Australia, to people away from home who want to hear a familiar voice, especially at this time of year. You'll be proud to be doing your part to keep WBAI on the air, serving our communities. You can also visit WBAI.org and click the green BAI Buddy sign with the peace dove and sign up through our safe, friendly portal with thanks from us at Ecologic and WBAI. Or call 212-209-2950 and say you want to be a BAI Buddy for any amount in the name of Ecologic or all BAI shows. Just a few minutes of your time lets us know that you value independent, progressive news, information, and entertainment.
If you prefer, you can send a check or money order for your membership and our premiums. Mail to WBAI Radio, Attention Membership, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. That's 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, 11217.
And here is Jethro Tull singing Ring Out Solstice Bells. That was Jethro Tull singing Ring Out Solstice Bells from their album Songs from the Wood. Nearly every song on that album is nature-based. You're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Donna Stein.
And I'm Sally Gellert. A quick announcement for New Jersey activists. Empower New Jersey and Allies are hosting a rally in support of 100% real clean energy for New Jersey on Monday, December 18th at 9 a.m. outside the State House in Trenton, where the Senate Environment Committee will vote on a bill that could move New Jersey into 100% truly clean energy by 2035, if the right amendments are made, and an Assembly Committee could hold a hearing and vote on an unaffordable dirty gas RNG bill with billions in subsidies to the fossil fuel industry. We'll post a link on our site, ecoradio.org. Now we're back with Kyle Bennett and Joel Kupferman.
So, Kyle, you were talking about the whole water system of cities and how PFAS is everywhere.
Yeah, so once the human waste goes through the wastewater treatment system, what's left after they treat it and dry it, take out all the liquid, is this what they call biosolids. It's just human poop. EPA thought it would be a good idea for beneficial reuse, and they have allowed this to be applied to land for fertilizer. So farmers use it to fertilize their crops. Now, just to be clear, organic farms are not allowed to use biosolids as fertilizer. Conventional farms are. But the amount of PFAS that's in these biosolids is astronomical. Ooh. And that PFAS will get into the roots and the shoots and the leaves of the vegetables. So farms all over the country are suffering from this. There are farms in New Mexico, in Michigan, and in Maine that have had to shut down. In fact, there was a young family owning a farm in Maine. They had to actually desert the farm because there was a drought and there was so much PFAS in the soil, they were inhaling it when it was dusty and it was dangerous. And they cannot no longer use the land. So the milk is contaminated, the meat is contaminated. These farmers are losing their farms because of the amount of PFAS in their products from these biosolids. So very, very scary thing going on here with biosolids and PFAS.
Did those farmers create a movement when they lost their farms?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There are a number of documentaries and videos. Vice did a really good one on a farmer in Michigan. There's a new movie coming out soon. I think it's called Sludge. So they are fighting back. And Maine, this is why Maine is taking PFAS so seriously, because so many of their farms have been impacted. Maine actually proposed a fund where they can help these farmers survive. I mean, you can't do anything with the land for decades, if not hundreds of years. It's just lost. The only thing, what they're trying to do with them now is put solar farms on them, because, you know, that's obviously you don't eat the solar panels, and that will something you can do with the land in the meantime while the PFAS takes decades to break down. But yeah, it's a nightmare, an absolute nightmare.
Unfortunately, though, not everyone could live in Maine, and it's the states that where these chemical factories are located, such as Alabama, Mississippi, and we could see the great progressive state of Texas. It's not leading a fight to prevent chemical exposure.
But you say it takes decades to break down. Does that mean that PFAS aren't always forever chemicals?
Some of them will take hundreds of years. So each different chemical has a different half-life. So some of them will break down in 6 years. Some of them will break down in 100 years. The problem is we don't even know what most of these chemicals are. There are 14,000 of them, but we don't even have the chemical structure. We can only test for about 70 of them. So there was just an article that came out from the University of North Carolina yesterday, I believe, that showed that they discovered 8 new PFAS that they found in the environment. We don't know how they're getting there. We don't know if they're being manufactured and EPA just doesn't know, or if they're just reforming, because PFAS chemistry is really complex and some of them will break down into smaller types of PFAS. They're usually defined by their chain length, how many carbons they have. And the rule of thumb is that the longer chain there is of carbons, the more toxic they are. It's not always true, but it seems to be a general rule. Mm-hmm. So some of these long chain carbon chain PFAS will break down into some of the smaller ones, but sometimes they break down into PFOA or PFOS, which are the two that we know are carcinogens. So it's really, it's a national crisis, a national crisis.
Yeah, I mean, the F of PFAS is fluorine, and fluorine is one of the most active elements on the entire periodic chart. So of course there's it's a hellraiser.
Yeah, fluorine is so reactive, and that fluorine carbon bond, as I said earlier, is so strong. We really need to start using chemicals that don't have fluorine. I mean, it's really, the fluorine is dangerous.
As a host of a radio show, you try to be, you know, as objective as you can, but it just makes me so angry.
Joel, what were you talking about? The researchers pinning down PFAs.
I was just going back to the firefighting uniforms. Mm-hmm. It's really incumbent that this, especially on the firefighters, that we really have to protect our first responders. They're the Absolutely. Ones that are going into these yeah. fires. They're the ones that are going into the buildings. And people should know in New York City, with the recent building collapse in the Bronx, that there is so little enforcement in terms of building, not even just health, but building safety. So it's like a wholesale abandonment of enforcement. So it's got to start, you know, from the top, and has to basically go down to the bottom.
You know, it's enough these people are putting their lives on the line going into fighting a fire. They're the equipment that the clothing they wear shouldn't be attacking them as well, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, they didn't sign up for that.
And the mayor's trying to remove firefighting regulation enforcement from the fire department to the Department of Buildings, which is totally absent. So it just really shows, you know, who is pushing it's non-recognition.
Well, the one good thing is that the new-ish president of the IAFF, the International Association of Firefighters, he is Ed Kelly. He is very, very passionate about protecting his firefighters. I think there are 1.3 million or something firefighters who belong to the IAFF in the U.S. and Canada. And he is passionate about getting PFAS out of their gear and to protect them the best he can. And the prior president of the IAFF didn't really care. So they are making headway. He's a great guy.
Well, that's encouraging.
Really. Well, we're living in an era where people acknowledge the firefighters as the most heroic employees, maybe even more than teachers. And
volunteers.
So it's really good that that's being paid attention to, because if they remove it, it helps everybody. And Joe, what you said about the Department of Buildings sort of running the city goes with, you know, here there's a huge budgetary crisis in New York City, and there's all those uncollected fines from the Environmental Control Board. I learned about that from you years ago, and the city still doesn't collect them.
Well, the latest figure is $2.1 billion in uncollected fines. And this is New York City. So you can imagine elsewhere. And they keep on saying they don't have enough money to enforce or collect. But fortunately, New York City and other places, including New York State, has something called the bad actor policy. If someone has a record of labor violations or environmental violations, the city's got a right not to hire them, lease them, or give them permits. And they're not doing it. So the problem is that the city and the state are rewarding bad actors and allowing them to continue. And just by enforcing that simple law, it's like procure, you know, where that money goes, where that budget money goes, could lead to a lot of changes, immediate changes.
And how do we enforce them to enforce that?
That's partly political pressure that's out there.
Do a lot of jurisdictions have that sort of bad actor law? That sounds like a good one.
I believe so. And if not, that's one of the things that people should fight for. And also what they should be fighting for, and this is Kyla's expertise, they should be fighting for more whistleblower protection. We have a lot of our cases came from phone calls that reached our desk at 9 o'clock at night, people complaining that there's improper government activities or just improper oversight. So it's really important that people fight for whistleblower protection. And Kyla might want to just comment on that.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct, Joel. And you'd think, I mean, under the Trump administration, of course, things were awful for whistleblowers. But honestly, they're not a whole lot better under the Biden administration. And the White House Office of Science and Technology has drafted up a scientific integrity policy for federal agencies, which is just a disaster. It basically says that federal employees are not allowed to speak out about anything that might affect government policy. Well, basically everything they do at EPA affects policy. So we're fighting that. But, you know, scientific integrity is a huge, huge problem in a lot of these agencies.
So how do we keep that?
I just want to say that the first thing is that they don't want to test. So across the board, and we were involved with the Flint case in Detroit, the malfeasance of the government is if they don't want to test, they don't force testing. So if it's not tested, out of sight, out of mind.
So how do we, what's the solution to what you just brought up, Kyla?
You know, the solution to all of this is voting. Make sure you vote. But also to contact your representatives, both at a state and federal level, and fight for this, because it's really frightening what this nation is becoming. You know, the lack of faith in science, that, you know, people are feeling like they can't trust scientists. And while it is true that some scientists are bought and paid for, I mean, there are industry shills, there are some incredible scientists at our federal agencies like the Department of Interior and EPA and the Corps of Engineers. Some, you know, people work there because they truly care about the environment, but they're not allowed to do science correctly. And surprisingly, very few of our environmental laws require the use of the best available science. So sometimes you can have the science that tells you that something bad is going to happen, or this species is going to go extinct or whatever, and there's nothing you can do about it because you're not required to use that good science.
Yeah, we should take advantage of citizen science, which EPA has some support. We're providing air monitors to tenants that are adjoining brownfield sites. The state refuses to make sure that soil, that toxic soils, is not being resuspended and going into people's apartments. So the main thing is early intervention and identification of what's there. And we're doing this campaign of getting people to at least grab samples, to have some testing, and to force the government agency to act, that it's we're trying to create prima facie evidence that they can no longer ignore problems.
Yeah, you talk about voting, and of course there are those who complain about the quality of the candidates, but voting is just the first step. After they're voted in, they got to be held accountable. You have to keep on them, whether or not you voted for them. Let them know that you won't be doing it again unless they get their act together.
Absolutely. And citizen science, Joel is right. Citizen science is a way to go. In fact, EPA just came out with a very strong ruling on this one company that fluorinates plastic containers. And that whole thing was discovered actually by me using citizen science and forcing EPA to do the right thing. So citizen science is very important, and getting people out there to do their own testing, their own advocacy, and forcing the hand of these agencies is a possible thing.
Yeah, explain what that whole putting fluorine in plastic packaging, what it did to the products within the package.
Sure. So this one company, Enhance, does this method of fluorinating to create a barrier in the plastic containers so things don't leak out, to make them stronger and to prevent leakage. And in the process of fluorinating those plastic containers in this chamber, they inadvertently created massive amounts of PFAS, which is leaching into the contents of these containers. And these containers are used for everything, pesticides, fuel, household cleaners, home personal care products.
But they were stopped.
Not yet. They're still going.
They're still going.
EPA did issue an order saying end of February they have to stop, but they have done an emergency appeal. So we'll see what's going to happen. I'm a little nervous.
We need more lawyers on the good side, not on the bad side.
For sure. Yep.
Wow. I mean, there's so much going on. You know, we try to keep up with as much as we can on Ecologic. And thankfully, we have people like Joel Kupferman right here in the city to let us know what's going on the legal end of things. And occasionally he helps produce a radio show such as the one you're hearing right now.
Yay, Joel. Well, it's time to wrap up. Time goes by so quickly. So thanks for joining us. For more information, we link to our guest sites on ecoradio.org. We have information on a wide variety of environmental issues on our website, where you can find links to our previous shows on many environmental issues. Look over the site, ecoradio.org. And if there is a show or news item for which you'd like a follow-up or news report, there is a clickable link near the top of the page, just under the promo meme, to email us and give to WBAI.org to become a BAI buddy or choose premium.
Join us next Wednesday, December 20th at 10 a.m. We love to stay in touch with you. So those of you online, sign up for our email list while you're checking out ecoradio.org. Those of you on Facebook, please like our page. We're at WBAI Ecologic. No dashes.
WBAI is community radio. And there's lots of ways to get involved. And, of course, we always need your donations. We need your contributions to support everything that makes a broadcast happen. The engineers, electricity, equipment upkeep, rent. Pledging as a BAI buddy now during this show really helps Ecologic especially.
We are always glad to have you with us for Ecologic, live or on the archives. This show will be on the WBAI archives in just 5 or 10 minutes.
Our thanks to our engineer, Michael G. Haskins. We couldn't do this without you. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. Join us next Wednesday, December 20th at 10 a.m. We're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. between Covert Action Bulletin and Living for the City. Check our website for details. Thanks for being our listeners.
See the sun, how bright it shines on the nations of the earth. All who share this thing called life celebrate each day's rebirth.
So solar power, inexpensive energy. So
the sun. This is Julian Assange. You're listening to WBAI New York. Stay strong and keep listening.
David Kenny of Everything Old is New Again every Sunday night at 10. Please join me then, and please support WBAI at our brand new old number, which is 212-209-2950. Again, that's 212-209-2950. Hey, it's our old number, but it's new again, because everything old is new again. I like it.
This is Ralph Pointer. Join me and others every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time on WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial. It would appear the human movement is such that at any moment in history, there are too few that understand possibilities of existence that would benefit all who inhabit this planet and are willing to act on this understanding. This program will feature that few. What are your views on these issues that impact your life today? What are your views on America today? What are your views on America's future? Can we talk? Call in 212-209-2877. Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial.
WBAI's local station board, the Pacifica Foundation Board, responsible for advising local management and operations, is holding its next regular meeting on Wednesday, December 13th at 7 p.m. This is when newly elected LSB members will be seated. The public meeting will be held on Zoom and includes an opportunity for public comment. The fastest and easiest way to join the meeting is by using the link on the Pacifica calendar at kpftx.org and on the WBAI website, wbai.org. You can also access the meeting by calling 929-205-6099. The number again, 929-205-6099, and enter this meeting ID, 922-457-2995. That ID again, 922-457-2995. And the password is 995-995-99. Again, the LSB meeting is Wednesday, December 13th at 7 p.m. We hope you'll join us.
All right, this is a stick-up. Women and children, jump off the train. The rest of you, on the floor. I said pronto.
But kind sir, this isn't just any train. It's the Arts Express. We're in the middle of a fascinating interview with the major film director. And following that will be a review of a new indie feature. And then there's a reading from one of the most stimulating poets in the U.S.
That does sound interesting. Well, in that case, let's all retire to the bar car and listen. Let's keep that big train a-rolling.
That's Arts Express, Wednesdays at 9 p.m. with host Prairie Miller and co-host Jack Shalom.
WBAI, New York.